There's a program on the History Channel called Forged in Fire. How many of you have seen that or know of that? Hey, there you go. Forged in Fire. The idea behind the show is that the contestants are given the task of manufacturing or forging a weapon or tool out of steel. And the weapon or tool, whether it's a knife or a sword or a spear, is then tested as to its strength and durability and its ability to accomplish the task for which it was designed. The question at hand is, will the weapon or tool stand the test? Will it function as it was designed? Will it endure? Will it pass the scrutiny of the experts? Last week we talked about great faith out of Matthew chapter 8. Take your Bibles and turn to Matthew chapter 8. We talked about great faith, and I will call that establishing faith. We defined great faith. We identified it. We established the nature and essence of faith, and specifically great faith. If you missed that, go back to the website. It would be good for you to think that through in light of that text. Now this week we're looking at chapter 8, verses 18 through 34. Matthew chapter 8, 18 to 34. We're going to look at the exercise of faith. Last week, the establishment of faith. This week, the exercise of faith. The fact that discipleship, those who claim faith, will be tested. I think of our military and our veterans as they went through the military. There were times, at boot camp at least, and beyond, in which they were tested. They were tried, whether it was boot camp or whether it was out in the field. So we're looking at this matter of testing. Will your faith stand the test of discipleship? Will it function as it ought? Will it endure? Is your faith genuine? Is your faith the real deal? So take your notes. You can follow along in YouVersion if you'd like, or we have the notes there for you. The take-home thought is your faith must stand the test of discipleship, or it's fake faith. Your faith must stand the test of discipleship, or it's fake faith. So we look at this passage. What does this passage then teach about faith? Look at verses 18 through 22 to start with. When Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Remember last week they were at Capernaum, which was on the west side of the Sea of Galilee. And the Sea of Galilee isn't very big. It's only 6 miles, but they're looking at the traveling across to the west side. So the crowd gathered around him. He gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Verse 19, then a teacher of the law came to him and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus replied, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my Father." But Jesus told him, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead." So we look at this and what's going on here. Well, I'm going to call this faltering faith. Faltering faith says, "I will follow, but." I will follow, but. So here you have an example of someone who proclaims, "I will follow you wherever you go." I heard the story of the young man who writes the love of his life. "Oh, dear love, I would climb the highest mountain for you. I would cross the widest sea. I would give my very life to show my love for you. By the way, I'll stop by your place tomorrow if it doesn't rain." Really? You know. So that's kind of what this man said. This man said, "I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus knew his heart, and he states the stark reality. Foxes have holes. Foxes have places that they stay. Birds of the air have nests where they stay. But the reality of the matter is, I don't know where I'm going to be tonight. I don't know where I'm even going to lay my head tonight. And then he gives another example of someone who wanted to bury his father. And you might say, well, what's wrong with that? Come on, Jesus, that sounds so uncaring. How uncaring of you to not let someone bury their loved one and take care of some family business. Well, the problem was that in that culture, burying the dead meant waiting for someone to die so as to bury them. It was simply saying, I have a parent who will die sometime in the future, and I want to take care of them until they do die. And that could take years. So in essence, what these individuals were saying is, I will follow you when it's convenient. See, Jesus knew these men's hearts. And following Jesus means you must be willing to sacrifice. It may mean giving up one's right to the comforts of this life. As a believer, you must be willing to push yourself outside your comfort zone. Let me tell you, serving at the Lincoln Community Center, it would push a lot of us out of our comfort zone. We're just not used to that environment. You know, a community center, there's all kinds of kids around, and they're different than maybe you are. And there's a lot of people who have needs that come in. And so it's a community center. It's kind of a melting pot. So you kind of go there and it's like, oh, man, I'm not used to this. And we've been invited. You know, our vision statement is to show Christ as indispensable to our community. We've been building this relationship with the Lincoln Community Center. And in fact, through our 5K, we've provided funds for this. And so we've been invited to come and help set up, help tear down, help provide the desserts. Baker buy, supply a pie. I mean, you know, it's a great way for you to get involved in ministering to folks in our community who might not otherwise have a Thanksgiving dinner. So allow yourself to be pushed out of your comfort zone on something like that. It may mean giving up your right to stay in one place. It does mean to get out beyond these four walls to serve. Now, we do have awesome opportunities to serve through the ministry here at FBC, right? Children's ministries, the nursery. Awesome opportunities to serve kids, and even kids from our community who come in. There's that opportunity there through our youth and children's programs. I think of our audiovisual. I think of our choir, our music ministries. I think of our teaching. I think of our calls, our visitation, our outreach, those kinds of things. Our life groups, they're all things that we kind of do here, and those are great opportunities to minister, but when it comes to discipleship, it also should push you beyond your comfort zone. This is safe here, right? This is safe, and that's good. Take that to heart, but be willing to be pushed beyond the four walls to your neighbors, to your friends, to the neighborhood, so as to show Christ. That's what Jesus is saying. Hey, you know, you might find that you're not at the same place. It's not just come here every Sunday and get fed, but it's be fed so as to get out there beyond your comfort zone. It may mean not only making disciples here, as we've talked about in our community, but somewhere around the world. I think of Dan and Rachel Lewis, one of our own couples, an engineer, a school teacher, who were willing to say, you know what, we're going into missions, and they're serving in Ethiopia right now, faithfully. Wow. Comforts are different than here, but that's what following Christ may do and should do, is to push you beyond your comfort zone. It also means trusting Him through the uncertainties of life. Even if life throws you a curve, you will trust Him. You will follow Him through the uncertainty, whatever that uncertainty may be. Faltering faith says, I believe, but. Right? I believe, but I need to do something else first. I believe, but I will follow you when it becomes convenient. I believe, but I'm not willing to do what you want me to do. I believe, but I'm not willing to make any sacrifices. I believe God, or I believe in God, but... Now, if you've been around here very long, you've heard me say, there are no yeah buts in the Bible, right? There are no yeah buts in the Bible. Faltering faith says, I can do my own thing in my own way, in my own time. Let's look at verses 23 to 27. Then he got into the boat and his disciples followed him. Without warning, a furious storm came up on the lake so that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, saying, Lord, save us, we're going to drown. And he replied, you of little faith, why are you so afraid? Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, what kind of man is this? Even the winds and waves obey him. I'm going to call this fearful faith. Lord, save us. We're going to drown. Isn't it interesting? Look at verse 10 from last week. That Jesus described the faith of a Gentile, not a Jew, not a normal, typical follower of Jesus in that day. He described the faith of a Gentile centurion as great faith. And yet here he describes the faith of his disciples, those who were following him, as little faith. Why would that be? Well, you see, these disciples, they followed Jesus. They got in the boat. Hey, we're going to the other side of the lake. Jesus was with them when the storm arose, and while the storm was taking place, but he was sleeping. Imagine that. And the disciples were fearful. Lord, save us, we're going to drown. And Jesus says they had little faith. Why? They were fearful. Fearful because they faced a sudden and unexpected occurrence. A storm. This storm, it came out of nowhere. Aren't those the kinds of things that test your faith? Things that are sudden and unexpected. Like you're in a hurry to get to work or to get somewhere and there's a red light. Oh my goodness. You know, I was needing a green light. Oh God. You might say, it's a little. But aren't those the things that test you? You know, think about it. Or maybe you were carrying the baby out this morning, you know, and you're already running late to church and the baby spits up all over your outfit, and you got to go change your clothes, right? You know, it's those unexpected things. And I don't know about you. You're looking at me like, really, Pastor? Yeah. Those are the things that test me. You know, they're sudden. They come up and it's like, oh, why now? Why me? Okay, well, maybe you've never had that happen to you, but it does to me. Plans change. Things break down, right? But what about when the doctor's office says, doctor needs to talk to you as soon as you can come by the office? The doctor walks into the room and says, I got some bad news. Or maybe you get that call in the middle of the night and said, I'm sorry to tell you there's been a terrible accident. And someone you love or care for is injured seriously. Or maybe the sudden death of a loved one. Those things, great or small, test our faith, right? And here the disciples, they were unwilling to trust him during the uncertainty of the storm. They were willing to follow Jesus when the water was calm. Come on, guys, let's go. We're going to go to the other side of the lake. Hey, okay, all right, everybody climbs in the boat. Hey, this is great. We're following Jesus. But when the storm hit, there was uncertainty and the resultant fear, right? Oh, Lord, what's going to happen now? Their focus was on themselves as to what might happen. It's interesting that they stated it as a certainty, didn't they? They said, "We are going to drown." You know, was that the truth? You know, think about it. Was Jesus going to drown for their sins? No. Jesus was there. The God of all creation. Jesus was in the boat with them. Physically with them. They're really going to sink and drown? Absolutely not. It was the fear of what might or could happen. It was a lack of faith, lack of trust. They did not fully comprehend who was with them. Look again at verse 27. The men were amazed and asked, "What kind of man is this?" Really? What kind of man is this? "Even the winds and waves obey him." You remember the centurion had great faith because of realizing the greatness in whom he was placing his faith. Now, I'm not sure that he had full comprehension of who Jesus was, but he had greater comprehension than even these disciples who were in the boat with him, following him. And his disciples had to ask, "Who is this guy? I mean, the winds and the waves obey him. Oh, my goodness." But doubting the Lord diminishes faith. Remember, as we talked about last week, guard against faith in faith. I call it faith in faith. That, oh, I have faith that I'm going to beat this cancer. I just know that I'm going to do this. I'm strong and I can do this. I have the faith to overcome. That's faith in faith. But faith, now listen carefully, faith is believing that God will do what is best in His time, in His way, for His good purpose, and being okay with that. Because you trust Him. And then you act in light of that belief, which might include a calm assurance and prayer as opposed to a frantic frenzy. You get that call. You get that diagnosis. And rather than just going berserk, your heart turns to the Lord and trusts in Him. Doesn't mean you don't have tears. I remember when I had a car accident in high school. I refer to this once in a while if you're new with us, but I had a car accident in high school, head-on collision with a police car. And I was injured in various ways, but I had a little brother that was killed in that accident. I didn't know what had happened to him. Taken to the hospital, I was laying there, and I had a gash on my chin, and they were putting the numbing my chin. Of course, you wake up, you know, pretty readily when that happens. So at the moment when I was most wide awake during this time, they came to me and said, "We have bad news. Your brother was killed in the accident." And immediately I burst into tears. But I said, "You know what? God was preparing me for this." I don't know where that came from, other than the grace of God to help me through a time of need. Calm assurance and prayer. Measured emotion as opposed to being out of control. Seeking biblical counsel as opposed to leaning to your own understanding. Taking biblical action as opposed to just passively letting things transpire or doing things that are unbiblical. You see, great faith believes God and His Word. And then it acts upon what God says. It doesn't fear the maybes of life, but rather believes and trusts in God. Let's look at verse 28 to 34. When he arrived on the other side of the region of the Gadarenes, this again is the east coast of, and it was a region, the east coast of the Sea of Galilee, And so they traveled over there. When they arrived at the region of the Gadarenes, two demon-possessed men came from the tombs, met him. They were so violent that no one could pass that way. "What do you want with us, Son of God?" they shouted. "Have you come to torture us before the appointed time?" Some distance from them, a large herd of pigs was feeding. The demons begged Jesus, "If you drive us out, send us into the herd of pigs." He said to them, "Go." So they came out and went into the pigs, and the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and died in the water. Those tending the pigs ran off, went into the town and reported all this, including what had happened to the demon-possessed men. Then the whole town went out to meet Jesus. And when they saw him, they pleaded with him to leave their region. I'm going to call this faith of the foe. Faith of the foe. You say, well, what's that all about? James 2:19 says, "You believe that there is one God? Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder." Same word there for faith. They believe God, that there is a God. See, the enemy knows the power of the Lord, probably even more than you and I do. The demons were in control of these two men. They were violent. A parallel passage says they couldn't even put the one guy in chains. He would just break the chains. They were controlling. No one could pass that way. People were afraid of these guys. They'd tear them to pieces, evidently. And I want to tell you that this is the ultimate end of someone who allows themselves to be under the control of Satan. He's the enemy. He wants to ruin you. And you might say, well, it's not that big. What I do, I know it's wrong, but. There's the but, right? I know I shouldn't do it, but it's not that bad. There are other people who do it. I even know Christians that do it. And that's the way the enemy works. He disguises himself as an angel of light. I can get away with it this one time. And he just gets his foot in the door. But here, God, by His grace, He gives you a glimpse in what it is like to see the ultimate end of someone who has given themselves over to Satan, the enemy. Violent. Out of control. Can't even control themselves. They understood that they were subordinate. What do you want with us? What did they call him? Look at that. Verse 29. What do you want with us, Son of God? The disciples even said, who is this guy? Who is this man? They're saying, what do you want with us, Son of God? They understood their eternal destiny. Have you come to torture us before the appointed time? They knew, as the enemy of God, they knew that there is a judgment coming one day. And they requested to be in control of mere pigs. Now, again, I'm not sure I understand all the implications of that, but it seems that that was the best they could do. Obviously, the Son of God wasn't going to allow them to possess someone else. But how about these pigs? My point is that if the enemy understands the power of God, why should you struggle with your faith? The enemy knows this. Man, it ought to say, whoa, wait a minute. It ought to be a check in your heart to say, oh my, God, help me increase my faith in you. Because of who you are and your greatness. The whole town understood Jesus' power, and it was unsettling to them. When you step out in faith and people around you in the world, your neighborhood, at the workplace, at school, when they look at you and they see, man, this person stands for God and lives for God, it can be convicting to them. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. And they may avoid you. They may push you away. I don't know. It may happen. That's what happened here. They're like, man, we don't want you around. They understood who Jesus was and His power. So there's even the faith of the foe. But I want to encourage you with following faith. And following faith is faithful. Following faith is faithful. How is that? Well, following faith obeys. Verse 22, Jesus told him, follow me and let the dead bury the dead. Following faith follows Jesus readily without excuse. Following faith is not fearful. It understands the nature of God and who He is. As He has revealed Himself in His Word, you're going to look at God, and when He says, I will never leave you, I am with you through the storm, you're going to believe that. You're not going to worry and fear and say, oh Lord, I'm going to drown. You're going to trust Him through it. It has confidence. And it obeys even as the winds and waves obey. Imagine that. Jesus calms the sea. And the winds obey Him. The waves obey Him. In verse 26 and 27, He replies to His disciples, you have little faith, why are you so afraid? Then He got up and rebuked the winds and waves, and it was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, what kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey Him. You see, following faith is submissive to the will of God. If the enemy submits, if the elements submit, then it stands to reason that you and I, if we're going to have great faith, submit, even during the storms of life, regardless to the intensity. Again, look at the take-home thought. Your faith must stand the test of discipleship, or it's faith, fake faith. Now, I hope you've been asking, okay, what's the test of discipleship? What's the test of discipleship? If I'm going to stand the test of discipleship, what is that test? And here it is simply, obedience. The test of discipleship is obedience. Great faith stands the test of obedience. Jesus said, follow me. Are you willing to follow Jesus? I just very quickly, three ways in which you can do this. The first is salvation. Are you willing to follow Jesus in the matter of salvation? Scripture says there is no other name under heaven given among men whereby you must be saved. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 23. And this is His command, to believe on the Lord Jesus Christ. That's a command. Are you willing? There is no other way of earning or achieving salvation but through Jesus. That's why Jesus died on the cross and rose again. Are you willing to believe that? You and I deserve to die. To spend eternity separated from God. But that's why Jesus died. Are you willing to believe that and surrender to Him, repenting from sin and say, oh God, I need You, surrendering to Him in salvation. Are you willing to surrender to Him and follow Him in discipleship? Many of you have already done that. You've trusted Christ, but are you willing to follow Him in discipleship? Again, which means obedience. There's submission. Willing to obey even when it's hard. You know, God asks us to do some really tough things sometimes. One of the things we're going to do in just a few minutes is take an offering. Can I just use that as an example of submission and even sacrifice? That's another S here. To where, man, sometimes it's tough. Not sure how we're going to make it here, but I want to be obedient to the Lord and give as unto the Lord. I'm willing to do that. It's a symbol of my discipleship. I'm going to obey to give as I have been, as I've been given to. So submission, are you willing to obey even if it's hard? Are you willing to sacrifice? Ephesians 5:25 says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave Himself up for her. So men, there's a way in which you are to sacrifice, just like Christ did, to be willing to give of yourself. So often, there are men who think that they are the king of the castle. Snap your fingers, give me the remote, give me my my food, and I'm happy. You know? And if you don't do that, I'm going to be angry. But as you're willing to sacrifice, you're willing to serve. It's interesting that in Ephesians 5, where it talks about husbands in that way, that he says, and that's a great passage to learn about marriage and the role of the husband and the role of the wife. There are other passages. By the way, Colossians 3:19 says, husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. So, again, are you willing to obey the direction from God? But that passage in Ephesians 5, he says, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. He's talking about how things ought to be in the church and what Christ did for the church and how we respond to Him in light of that and to one another. So there's submission, there's sacrifice, but then there's also service. This life is not about you and me, is it? It's about loving the Lord with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving others as ourselves. Serving Him faithfully, and that service for Him often translates into loving and serving others. Think about that. There's the two greatest commands. Jesus had it right. Surprise, surprise. He boils it down to love the Lord your God with everything in you and love your neighbor as yourself. You get that right, and you got this matter of discipleship. Following in obedience, serving Him faithfully. Listen, it ought to make a difference in your life so that when you leave here, it's not just a matter of, okay, got church done, we're ready to go. No, it's Jesus makes a difference in how you live beyond the four walls of this building. In order to do that, we need